Good evening, everyone. Lovely to see you all. Lovely to be here. Please join me in prayer.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. From Paramahansa Yogananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, this is chapter 15, verse 15. Purushottama, the uttermost being. Krishna speaking, also, I am seated in the heart of all beings, and from me come memory and knowledge, as well as their loss. Verily, I am that which is to be known through the Vedas. Indeed, I am the Veda knower and the author of the Vedanta. Not only is God the life, mind, senses, soul, and ego in man, as declared in the foregoing stanzas, he is also the power of feeling in the heart, which determines the way human beings react to their contact with the objects of the senses. He empowers memory by which perceptions and cognitions are gathered and held, thence connected with one another in the accumulation of knowledge. And he is also the Maya, the deluding cosmic hypnosis that distorts the divine potentials of pure feeling, memory, and understanding, causing their loss in the soul-humiliating emotional likes and dislikes, misconception, and ignorance. Deluded beings become attached to their bodily instruments and personalize all their experiences, trying to bend them according to their own inclinations, not realizing that the Lord is the sole playwright. However, it is the actors themselves who choose what parts they will play. This is a fascinating chapter here, and what it speaks to, the Purushottama, is the Purusha, it's the light of your own being. And by its nature, it is universal. It is the Christ consciousness, the only begotten Son of God. It is through that light that the intelligence of the divine pervades all creation. And so when you have an illumined mind, you look out upon this world of creation, and you see embedded with everything that you see the intelligence of God. You look into a flower, and when you see that flower, the intricacy of its design, how it operates, the life that inhabits that flower that gives it its life, everything about it speaks of a divine origin. You see things in nature. You see a waterfall. You see a sunset. You stand beside the ocean and listen to the ocean speak to you. And all of these things are filled with an intelligence. Now, the mind that is numb to this kind of seeing and feeling of this universe just sees it as a sensory experience, perhaps is even afraid of it. When you see through the eyes of God, so to speak, then you see that there is nothing but divine intelligence dancing throughout all creation. It is the mind that divides things up and decides this is of God and this other is not. This is something that I'm attracted to and this other is something that I am repulsed from. And as a result, you are always in an up and down cycle. You like something, you dislike something. You're attracted towards one thing, you're repulsed from it. And so on goes the play forever and ever if you allow it. Now, everything is judged by the mind, but the mind does not see completely. When you see with the divine mind, you see the whole picture. For instance, if you were to see a house that was scheduled for being taken down, you might have a great affection and love for that house, or you're just plain used to seeing it day after day. And then one day you see the crew out and they're taking it apart, brick by brick, stone by stone, timber by timber. And you feel the loss of it. You wonder, why is this destruction going on? Why is this being torn down? This house has served so many families. It's been a hearth and home to so many down through the generations. But down it comes. And then you see a big hole in the ground. You say, is that an improvement? You see this big hole in the ground. The old house is gone. And then gradually the foundation is built. And you see something new come into being. And perhaps it is an improvement upon the old house that was there. And now you see the whole picture more completely. You see that the destruction needed to come in order for the new structure to take place. But if you only get a snapshot and see just the destruction, you say, what a terrible waste this is. Why can't they repair the old place? Why can't they get it into function? And perhaps it's past its prime and it's just way too expensive or it's not even possible to bring it into code and bring it into something that would be a good place for people to stay. And so through this simple example, we can see all the different aspects of creation that are constantly in play. Now, there are two ways of seeing this creation, through the human experience and through the divine consciousness. Through divine consciousness, you see everything manifesting divine qualities. And whether on the surface it appears to be divine or not, you nevertheless peer beyond the surface of things. You go deep into its nature. You see that it's involved in a process that ultimately will yield a good. And then you see things from the human standpoint. Now, from a human standpoint, we would definitely say that there are some things that are good, some things that are bad, even evil. When somebody takes the life of another person for no good cause at all, and you would say this is evil, they're just trying to satisfy their own desires, their own greed, acting out of fear, whatever the reason is not in any notion of any sense a good thing. And so you would not say that that comes from God, but that comes from the human ego's distortion of truth and of the reality that underlies everything that is. They don't see that underlying reality, therefore they don't act on it. They act according to lower impulses. But when you see the totality of that life, you see the people who act against their own inner divine nature eventually come to the point where, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hit bottom. You go to the depths of what you can go to, and you're disgusted by what you see. You realize that the choices that you have made have put you into a self-made prison. And you want out. And this is a great turning point in life. And if you had not gone to such extremes, perhaps you would not have come to that point where you had realized you really need to make a change. Now, this does not excuse bad behavior. Bad behavior is bad behavior. It results in harm to yourself and to others. But when seen from the larger viewpoint, you see that eventually it works out for good. And so now you see it through a new prism, through a new understanding. And because of that, you can see that it is God who is in charge of everything. Now here, it says God that is intimately involved in every aspect of your being. Now when we are operating in ignorance, we see and feel as if God is very far from us. That if we're not in right remembrance of our divine origin and who and what we really are in God, then we feel that God must be very far from that. But here Krishna, speaking as the divine spirit, as God itself, says, I am with you always, even as the Christ said. Because they both speak with one voice. They're both speaking from that higher divine life. And they're speaking because they intimately know it and feel their oneness with it. They can speak with authority on what the divine is doing and how it is manifesting, how it perceives things. And so it says here that God is with you always, even when you don't remember. In fact, Krishna says, I am in charge of memory. I am in charge of all that you do. And that you think that you're doing any of this is just a false an illusion. And it's something that's not real. Now this really flies in the face when Papa talks of the universal vision and that everything is God, the world is God. It flies in the face of our own judgment oftentimes. Well, I don't see it as God. I see it as a mess. I see it as people making the wrong choices, as people harming each other, not loving each other, as people stealing from each other, not giving to each other, as people doing everything against their own true nature. The world is a mess. And when a saint or a realized being like Papa looks out through his two eyes, he sees that everything is exactly as it ought to be. Because the further man runs away from his own divine nature, the more painful it becomes for him. Until finally he does hit bottom. And he does turn around. And he goes back towards his own divine nature. Now, the devotee embraces the roles that lead to liberation. He strives to attune himself to God and by ecstasy become free from the maddening, misery-making pairs of opposites he confronts on each stage of life. He realizes that through the enactments of limiting human perception, memory, and the entangling emotions of the heart are a pure part of God's drama. They lose their reality and hold on him when by pure feeling, divine recollection, and wisdom he re-identifies with his true self. The ordinary person immersed in his Maya-hypnotized existence remains in ignorance, deeming himself to be a physical being. The emancipated devotee, lives in the awakened memory of his divinity. On our drive up here, Joy was reading from Papa Ramdas and stories by Papa Ramdas, and there is a quote in there. And in the quote, Papa said, the most powerful thing that you can do is to feel that it is God himself who is prompting you to chant Ramnam. Now, why is this so powerful? Because it takes away any initiative or any power of your human self, and it deposits it clearly at the doorstep of your divine self. When you feel that it is God who reminds you of God within you, that it is God who is awakening himself through the evolutionary forces that you feel stirring inside of you, then you and God are not separate, and God is certainly not far away from you. When you feel that it is the power of God flowing through you that allows you to speak, to think, to feel, to have your being, there can be no separation between you and the divine. That's why it's so powerful. For you to be able to rise up to that consciousness, you can begin by affirming it mentally. Now, it's a fun thing to do, really, when you begin to assign everything to God, because when He thinks certain thoughts through you, and you think, well, God, that's not a very divine thought that you're thinking through me there. I'm angry, or I have greed, or I have lust, or I have whatever it is that's going through me. That's not a good thing. Now, why are you thinking that way through me? Why are you feeling that way? Why are you prompting me to act in that way? That's not, I know that's not how you want me to be. And when you do that, make that direct contact back to God. Whatever that desire nature is that is not of God will drop away from you. It will lose its power in that moment. When you really assign the responsibility to God, because you have reached back through your own mind and made that direct connection. That is in contrast to feeling, well, here I am, I'm all by myself, I'm thinking the wrong way, I'm doing the wrong way, I must be a terrible person, I'm absolutely the worst devotee who ever walked the earth. And here I am, and you feel sorry for yourself. And you feel that you've fallen so low, and look how far you feel from the divine consciousness in that moment. You see, it's a wonderful play of the ego. Because the ego gets to continue to play its game. When it makes you think in that way, it gives the ego more power, not less power. So to connect yourself directly to God is the most powerful thing that you can do. Feel that it is God who is prompting you to make spiritual progress, but also connect it right back to God when you feel that He is taking you away from Himself. Put the responsibility on Him. The yogi who is one with omnipresent God sees Him seated in all men in the heart, memory, and powers of perception, not only confusing mortals through Maya's distortion of these powers, but also dissolving those deluded states of consciousness in self-realized souls. Isn't this exactly the same thing that Papa speaks about as the universal vision? You see that it is God who is in the heart of everyone. And you depersonalize it, you see. You depersonalize it. We personalize things. If somebody says something to me and I don't like it, perhaps it's demeaning, perhaps it's lacking respect, I personalize it. Why are they speaking to me that way? They shouldn't be speaking to me that way. They should treat me with respect. They should treat me according to how I would treat them. And so when you personalize it, you make a connection with that other person on a human-to-human level. But when you have the impersonal view, and by impersonal, I mean God view. Oh, this is God who's prompting this individual to speak to me in this way. Now, can I keep my divine vision? Can I keep seeing God in this person, God in all the circumstances, while this person is speaking to me in a demeaning way? This is my test. Can I do it? And can God awaken in me with such strength and such power that He can overcome any impulse to the contrary? And so not only are you putting the challenge to yourself, but you're putting the challenge to God. God, you awaken in me. You awaken your power of true perception. You awaken your power of feeling of attraction to you alone and not to this world. You awaken yourself in me. And when you do so, then I become divinized within my own consciousness. Back to Master here. God is the essence of all knowledge. He is the source of all the wisdom of the Vedas and in the Vedanta or the Upanishads, the omniscient knower of all truth to be known. That is the Veda. That's what it means. It's the knower of all truth to be known. And the author of that complete knowledge, or the Vedanta, that's what that means, complete knowledge. He directs the processes in all forms of human cognition. He is the consciousness of all sentient beings, angels, deities, yogis, ordinary men, goblins, animals, and all other forms of life. The Lord knows all the states of the soul as it descends from spirit into the human form. He knows all perceptions of body-bound delusion. Now listen to this. God knows what it's like to live in a human body. He knows what it's like to be bound within the senses. He knows what it's like to feel weak, to feel powerless in certain situations, to feel disturbed. He knows what it's like to be in ignorance. Now, does that surprise you? It should, at least to some degree, that God knows that intimately. When I was at Cloud Mountain, and in a year of silence and seclusion, I was thinking on certain ideas, and one of them was how inadequate I was to the path, and how Babaji and Jesus and the great masters must look down on me and all of us as aspirants, because we fall so short from the goal, and we don't really live up to the highest principles. And to my surprise, God said, you know, it's not that way. They don't look down on you. They look out through you. They look out through your eyes. They look out through your experience. Because they've been in human form, they intimately know the problems of what it is to be human. They know what it's like to be in a business that's having a rough stretch. They know what it's like to be in a business that's in a boom time. They know what it's like to be in a body that's not feeling well. They also know what it's like to be in a body that's in perfect health. They know it all. And when they think on you, they look out through your own experience because they're unafraid. But they know something more than what you know. They know, in their case, in their own evolutionary growth over time, how they eventually became divinized in their consciousness. And they see that same potentiality in you. And it's that strength of them seeing God within you, and that God is awakening, He is emerging within your human form. It's not complete yet. It's not totally there. But they see it. They feel it. They know it. And that's a great blessing. And this is one of the great blessings that realized beings give us, is they don't see it as in a static form, just where we're at today. But they see where we're going to and what eventually we'll evolve into. And that is a great, great strength. And when I heard that from God, it came as a great comfort to me. And with that understanding, I understood more perfectly. It's my human ego that was imagining what it was like to be in a realized state and then projecting that onto these wonderfully realized beings. But it was a false perception. It was a false perception, and one that God quickly changed within me. The Lord knows all the states of the soul as it descends from spirit into the human form. He knows all the perceptions of the body-bound soul, all its sensory and motor experiences during the state of delusion. He knows also the perceptions of a soul as it climbs back towards His liberating presence. As all the waves dance in the bosom of the sea, so all perceptive processes of the sentient creatures occur within God, within His unbroken awareness. Now there will be those who will tell you that this world is just an illusion, that this world is run by the devil, that this world is false, that this world has no truth in it. The higher reality is that God manifests His self as this universe, that there cannot be anything that is created that is separate from God. because He is the all and all and all. And yes, He is that delusive force that makes us feel separated from God, even as He is that unifying force that brings us back into union with God. And He knows it all. He knows you. He knows you exactly as you are today. And so there is not one thing for you to fear in exposing yourself to the illumination of God. Because there's no part of your life or your experience that He does not know and is not intimately acquainted with. But the moment you let go of your attention of the human ego and trying to hide in a false illusion, and you open yourself to that wonderful unifying presence, you defeat the ignorance that has been living in you for so long, right in that moment. The infinite omniscience is conscious of every ripple of perception and vibration playing on the oceanic bosom of His being. You see, everything happens in God, in the divine presence. So you do not have to go anywhere. You don't have to travel anywhere. You don't have to become somebody or something different than what you are. You simply, right where you're at, open yourself to the divine light. Surrender yourself to whatever it is that divine life would have for you. And when you do this, you are taken on a great journey. A great journey. And it is the journey of exploration. It is an adventure. It is everything that makes up life. Because you have to go through every level of existence, realizing and understanding that it is all God. When God took Papa on his trek around and up and down India, all over the place, he took no money with him, just one piece of extra cloth, his false teeth that he kept in a bag most of the time. And he carried nothing else with him, completely reliant upon God alone. And God took him all over the length and breadth of India, showing him how the divine spark was within everyone. And that when Papa looked out and saw that it was God in every form, it transformed the lives of people that his life touched. And in time after time, people would come to him in a gruff mood, even beating people up and causing all kinds of problems. And when Papa resolutely saw God within that being, it changed them. You see, it couldn't help it. Now, in order to really see God in everyone is really the product of doing our sadhana, our spiritual practice. But as our mind becomes more and more purified, we can't help it. It is an inevitable truth. And this is the thing that you are striving for, is to realize this inevitable truth. It is inevitable. It will happen. And to whatever degree you as an individual participate and harmonize your life with the divine principles that are taught here, then you will more rapidly advance in that purification. But if you choose to, out of your own will, to stay away, to go against the divine principles, then you delay that time. And you have to go through some more suffering. As Sri Yukteswar once said about a disciple who was making choices that clearly was taking him away from the spiritual life. And as Sri Yukteswar said, the world will have to be his guru for a while longer. You see, and he said it with a lot of sadness, because he saw within that one great potential to realize that one. I see that too. I see people come And sometimes they make progress, sometimes very great progress. But then some test comes along. Something disturbs the mind, or some desire nature awakens within that one. And they start making choices. At first, it doesn't seem consequential. It seems minor at first. They stay away a little bit. They stop meditating as often. Perhaps they start using some drugs or some drink. They start making some choices. They start hanging around with people who are not of a spiritual bent. And gradually their mind gets drawn back into the old desire nature and ignorance that begins to really deepen inside of them. And it's sad to see an individual go along that course, but you know, all of us have free will. And we can make those choices. We can. Somebody came to me once who had been with Mother. And they had decided to leave at that time, and they had gone on a long journey. And they had gone through many experiences. They wrote me a long letter about it. And as they went through these various experiences, they finally came to a point where they are feeling this divine Shakti, this life flowing through their spine. So they felt all right. But they wrote that they started to feel this life force going downward down the spine. Well, this is the opposite way that it should be going. Now, it's true. You can come to a point where you can feel that the life force is rotating, much as the Kriya breath does through the spine and the brain. And you can feel it spontaneously going. But you're not primarily focused on it as a downward force, but as a rotating force, a circulating force. But this one was going in this way, and there is no question about it that they had decided they wanted to go this way. And so the results would be predictable. Eventually, that downward facing force would eventually take them away. And so it did, and so it did. So we have to approach this all with humility and with great courage and a determination to go the whole way. Now, there are few that go the whole way, not because it's not possible, but because it's so tempting to make other choices. So we have to be determined and clear in our determination. When you look at the lives of any of the great masters or saints, you see there their clarity. They know which side their bread is buttered on. They know what will represent the highest spiritual growth, and they're willing to do it. Even if the whole world should stand against them, they're willing to do it. When you have that kind of determination, that kind of strength, that is God awakening inside of you. And it is a wonder and a glory to see, I can tell you. And the light begins to gradually illumine. And as you close these two eyes, you see the light awakening inside of you. You feel it moving through you. It lifts you into heavenly realms where you feel the divine life. You see it in operation through the divine light, and you hear it through the mighty roar of the Om. And you know that you are in touch with divine forces. We have an intimate gathering tonight, and so I thought it would be a nice time to open it to any questions that you might have about anything that I've spoken of this evening or about your own sadhana. It is. It's what I was saying, the difference between human view of things and divine vision. So when you look at this world from a human standpoint, you can say that there's good and bad. There's the pairs of opposites that are there. And Mother defined saint consciousness as an uplifted and elevated consciousness, but still in the realm of duality. There's good and evil. There's light and dark. And true enough, for most of us in our own spiritual evolution, we feel that way. We look out and we see the world that way. When your vision is completely purified and you're seeing it from a divine vision, this is Purushottama. This is that divine light married with all creation, all expression. And now when you are lifted in the state of Purushottama, there is no separation. So that you would see a human ego manifesting in somebody, you would still see that as being a manifestation of the divine. It's hard to comprehend that when we're still operating out of the dual nature, because then we're struggling, well, is it good or bad? Or are you saying that the ego is good then? And the thing is that when you're lifted up into that higher realm of knowing, there's those considerations simply drop away from you. There is no good or evil at that point. There's only God. So as long as we're operating in a dualistic state, we can't truly comprehend that. We can try to stretch our mind out to try to understand it, but we can't truly comprehend it. And yet it's held out to us in the teachings. This is something that you can attain to. And when you do, it dissolves all differences. All dualities drop away, and you only see a singular life operating in everything. And that's where Papa was operating. That's where Master was writing from as he was writing about this. So most spiritual masters will relate to us from a dualistic perspective because that's what we can understand. Papa said, as far as I'm concerned, you're all realized. You're all God. What is there to do? What is there for Ram Dass to do? He also felt that in seeing everyone as God was the greatest thing he could do to speed up their evolution, to bring them into that realized knowledge. But even in the realm of ignorance, he would say, you are divine. That is God who is acting in ignorance through you. So when we can throw the whole burden onto God and say, all right, if that's true, and then you're making trouble in me by thinking the wrong thoughts, by doing the wrong things, that's your responsibility. You have to fix it. Now, we can't just say that and then just, from an ego standpoint, go on our way. We have to really turn the burden over to God. We say, you fix it. And we mean it. We put the whole thing onto God. Then our part is to respond as the divine intelligence prompts us to do. So if we say, you fix it, and he says, all right, then no more of this. And we say, oh, I don't want to give that up. What can God do then? Then we've made our decision. So as I say, it's difficult to speak about because it's from a human perspective of talking about something that's a divine vision. And yet it's important to hold it out for us so that we know what we're aspiring for. And that when we begin to attain it, we can recognize it. We can see it. It helps us then. So from a human standpoint, we would say God is the very highest light and vibration. That's that place of vibration, that place of realization, that place of light. And when I feel connected to that, I feel connected to God. And when that manifestation of divine consciousness begins to manifest in me all the time, then there's nothing but God. And then when I open up these two eyes and I look out on this world, I see nothing but God. So that's the process. We go from the aspiration, searching, striving, doing everything in our power to attain the divine vision, being lifted up beyond this realm of duality and unifying ourselves with that pure static state of God beyond creation. And then, as we continue to purify ourselves, when we open up our two eyes and we operate out in this world, there's no separation during that time. We operate in this world in complete union with the divine. So that is the state of Purushottama. When we call Papa Purushottama Papa, that's what we're affirming, is that he had that divine vision. He had it in spades. And is perhaps the greatest spokesperson for it in the world. Both Papa and Mother, or Master and Mother, will speak from both. They had it. They had the universal vision. But they speak from both perspectives because they're trying to relate to people on a number of different levels. And so if you talk to somebody who has no experience with the divine vision and they say, everything is God, what? You're saying this war or this evil or this whatever it is God? I can't accept that. And they would be right to say it from their perspective, because that's not the highest vibration that they would think of as being God, truth, reality, light, love. That's God. That's where they know it to be. It's just their vision is not yet complete. So those teachings aren't for everybody. Purushottama. Universal vision. Does that help? All the relatives join in and pile on. There's a good joke about why God invented time. And the answer is so everything doesn't happen at once. But spiritually and psychologically, everything can happen at once, can't it? You start down a certain track of feeling or thinking, and if it has a long history in you, when this lifetime and other lifetimes, suddenly they're all in the room. They're all here. It gets quite crowded. And everything can happen at once, and you just feel overwhelmed with it all. And so when you recognize that this is the ego, it's the nature of the ego, and it's a way for the ego to keep the game going, make you feel bad about yourself, all of these other thoughts and feelings start cascading, you never have felt so distant from God in that moment. You feel you're unworthy. How could you even approach God? You know, just the whole thing. Once you recognize that's the ego, and it's actually playing a a game that keeps you even more distant. And you say, all right, so this is just the ego mind. Then you can set all of that aside, knowing it's the feelings are still there, the thoughts are still there, but you set it all aside. This is just a game it's playing. And I could just get caught in that maze forever and ever and ever, just thinking and feeling along those lines. And so in this moment, setting all of that aside, and I just affirm to myself, it's God inside of me right now. Whether I think I'm worthy of it or not, or whether I think I'm deserving, or whatever the notions are, it's God is inside me right now. Without that God force inside of me, I couldn't breathe, I couldn't think, I couldn't feel. None of it. It's the power that's feeding into me, even as I'm thinking this thought. And as you go through this with me, as I describe it, and you take it in through your own mind, what do you imagine yourself feeling then when you have those kind of associated thoughts, that it's God who's animating you? Even right now. And what do you notice about the feelings of separation and kind of going down as you had those other kind of thoughts? What do you notice about that then as you affirm that direct connection with God in this moment? But no power to them at all. Yeah. And you can break its back just like that. The moment you enter into the game of the ego and say, oh, yeah, I'm bad, or I shouldn't feel bad, but I do feel bad, I should be worthy, but I don't feel worthy, you're entering in where the ego is strongest. And you get into this battle with the ego, you can short-circuit all of that. Oh, it's God who's thinking that thought. God, why are you thinking that way through me? You're supposed to be leading me to freedom, and you're making me feel bad like this. What's that all about? The moment you do that, you short-circuit the ego. You go right around it. It's got nothing to hang on there. Isn't that beautiful? And the more skilled you get at it, you can do it within seconds. And you can be free of something that may have taken you down for days or weeks in the past. It is exciting. It works, and we just have to mindfully be present to it and remember it. And we can put the job of remembering on Krishna. Krishna, you said you're in charge of all memory. Right here. You have to pound it into my brain to remember to awaken. No dilly-dallying around when it comes to that. You must awaken inside of me. You must make me remember. I charge you with that responsibility. I remember when I first read of Master's affirmations and how he would charge God and he would demand of God, prayer demands. And I was taken aback by that. I thought, oh, I don't know if I could demand something from God. Now I find it very easy too. Because he's the fellow in charge. Who else am I going to demand it from? And it's my inheritance, it's my birthright. Everything else is a distortion. And so if I don't demand it of him, and he's not offended, he's, oh, that's clear. All right. If we're wishy-washy about it, God says, well, I'm not sure what you want. What do you... You want me? You don't want me? You want this? You don't want this? You decide. God, you must. Oh, okay. Says God, I know what you will need. I know what I will do. I came from Sri Yukteswar. I wanted that clarity. Cut through all this groveling nonsense. Affirm your connection with God, your oneness with God from the very beginning. It's a great short circuit. Shortcut. You short circuit the ego. Get right around it. It is exciting. You can report back to us how it works. Then it'll lose, if you're doing it sincerely, then it'll lose its power in you. You won't want it. Now, if you're just acting out of desire, I want this. I saw this great new BMW, and that's what I want, man. You have to give that to me. And it's just desire nature, you know. It's just, then, no, that's not sincerity. Doesn't mean that God couldn't will for you to have BMW. Obviously, he does. They exist in the world. And people have them. It's just, it can't come purely from that desire nature. It's, what do you want for me? What do you want for me? So let's say, well, I'm thinking about this particular job offer. And I think it's the right thing for me. But you have enough humility in there. It's not an absolute kind of thing. I think that's the right direction for me to go. Okay, God, you start to organize this for me. You make this possible. And as you take steps forward in that way, if that's, when you're sincere, if that's not right for you, you'll start to feel it down here in the solar plexus. You'll go, I'm uneasy. It's different than being nervous. It's the stop sign. It's this, no. No, that's not the right thing for you. And the further you go down that, the stronger that gets, you feel it. No, the answer is no. And then you turn yourself in another direction, and it's yes. It's a green light. Now, this is not to be confused with whether you run into obstacles or not, or whether things get difficult or not, or whether things just don't go smoothly. I get very suspicious of people saying, well, it was a sign from God because it wasn't all falling into place. I wasn't supposed to be doing that. I don't consider that a sign from God. There are a lot of things that require a lot of struggle from us when we do the right thing. Things just don't fall into place. But we feel the inner rightness about it. So I get very suspicious around signs. Because I know that there are times that we're asked to pursue things that aren't easy. But they are right, and we feel that they're right. And the great thing that happens when we pursue it and it's the right thing for us is we grow spiritually, because it draws more deeply from that deep spiritual well of life and intelligence and power inside of us. We have to, because we run out of it from an individual standpoint. We have to draw from those deep sources, and we actually grow in strength, and we grow in spiritual consciousness when we enter into that. Well, we should die trying them. Or there comes a time and that inner knowledge says, all right, you've done enough. Now it's somebody else's task to take over. And that happens as well. But as a general rule, we should complete what we start. It's a good habit. And particularly if you're prone to starting things and not completing them, be very kind of suspicious of, oh, this is difficult. Maybe I should give this up. Now let's see it all the way through to the end until I get very, very clear and definite knowledge that it's time to let it go. Other than that, my default will generally be, I will see this through to the end. Let the chips fall where they may. It doesn't always turn out successful from a worldly standpoint. And that's another great message from Krishna in here, is he said, you detach the end from the act with act content. You act because you know it's the right thing to do. Now, Krishna says there are people who are wildly successful in the world, but they're doing the wrong thing. They're in the wrong occupation. They could be good at it. They could make a lot of money at it. They could have fame at it. And it's not the right thing for them to be doing. While somebody over here may be really struggling materially, but it's exactly the right thing for them to be doing. You cannot judge based on how the world gives or takes in that sense. You can only know your own sense of that interior, yes, yes. I can't do anything else. I have to do this. I must do this. So there may be people who, from a worldly standpoint, are not wildly successful, but spiritually they are. And conversely, there can be people who are wildly successful on a material plane and spiritually are totally messed up. And we see a lot of them on the headlines of the magazines that are in the grocery store. They get very messed up there, doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. And yet, they can be very successful from a human standpoint, from the world standpoint. It's a tough one. If we strive to do something and from a worldly standpoint, we seem to fail. And yet, it happens. It happens to everybody. And if you see anybody who's had any degree of success, you'll almost certainly find where they have failed and failed and failed, and then they hit something and it's all the doors open. But almost in every circumstance, they will have gone through a series of failures before that. Yeah. It is. And one of my favorite examples is Brother Lawrence. Because here's this big, clumsy wolf of a guy who can't do anything, isn't capable of performing any of the functions, so they put him in the kitchen. I think they must add pretty tough pots and pans that he couldn't damage too badly. And there he sticks. They stick him, you know. And he's the lowliest guy in the monastery. But he gets this wonderful practice of practicing the presence of God. And it takes him over. It transforms him. But it doesn't make him the abbot. It doesn't make him the bishop. It doesn't make him the pope. He's still the dishwasher. And somebody comes to know of him and his qualities, and they ask him in through some letters to write about his experiences, which he then sends off, asks the person to burn them, to destroy them. They don't do it. Now they're published all over the world. I don't know who the abbot, I don't know who the bishop, I don't know who the pope was of his era, but I know Brother Lawrence because he loved God And he practiced that presence. Would he be surprised? I think greatly surprised. Would the abbot be surprised? I think probably greatly surprised. You know, so all the people at the time who appeared to have all the accolades, all the glory, all the position, everything, but who won in the end? We all won in the end because we have access to his letters. And that simple practice of practicing the presence. I'm sure he thought himself as a failure many times. I think that's one of the biggest tests we have, is what do others think? Of course, that's all tied in with what we think, but we're afraid of how others will judge us. And we always think God will judge us harshly, and it's never true. That love and that forgiveness and that allowance is always there if we can receive it. We finish with a prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Oh.